So hi, welcome to Grinds Podcast. I'm Shane.
I'm Glory.
And we're here with
Glass Beach.
I'm Jay. I'm singer, guitarist, keyboardist, co-producer for the band.
I'm Dax, and I do a lot of the visuals,
including our album cover.
I'm Jonas. I play the bass for Glass Beach and other stuff sometimes.
I'm William. I play the drums for Glass Beach, and I produce most of the music videos.
And I'm Lane. I play guitar. I do some engineering for the band, both live and studio, and I'm a co-producer with Jay.
And we're going to ask them some questions, say, about their new album, Plastic Death. So congrats on that. By the way, how do you feel about the response to it so far?
Very good.
Yeah. It's been very positive.
Very good. It's cool because it's the first time we've released something that is anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was like, that was exciting because...
Exciting and terrifying.
Yeah, we had conversations before it came out where we were like, hey, this could be extremely alienating and make a lot of people mad.
Yeah.
And we were like, we need to be prepared for that. And that there's been like some people who are obviously hoping for something closer to the first record.
Yeah.
But overall, like, new people have found it, and that's been really cool. There are people who hated the first record who love this one. So yeah. I don't know.
There's been people who didn't like the first who heard this one and kind of got us a little bit more and then went back and like the first more now. You know,
I've liked seeing from people. I mean, there's been a lot of my favorite responses, of course, are like very positive ones, but I also love seeing responses from people who are like, you know, I feel like this album's not really for me, but I can tell it for someone else. Like, I see a lot of shit like that. I'm just like, I get what they're doing. It's not what I feel like listening to, but I can tell it's good.
Totally.
Yeah. I've seen all of the responses because you guys have been interacting with so much of it on Twitter and quote tweeting everything from the nicest to the meanest shit possible. So I have seen it all.
Gotta prove them right, gotta prove them wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the album's great.
I think our soccer friend used to say, me and William's soccer friend. I'm just gonna jock for a second.
Our soccer friend, yeah.
I mean, it's also complicated because it's like, you know, I think that there's some, obviously there's some people who probably hate the guts of this album.
Yeah.
But like, I think that there's some people who will like, it's one of those things where it's like Twitter and other social media sites remove so much context and put such specific stuff in frame that sometimes I look at what someone says and my brain has started really going to like, what were they trying to say? Because sometimes I'm like, this sounds extremely mean.
I think Twitter imposes a kind of hostility, like, inherently.
Oh yeah.
And like, I kind of we're gonna leave it. We're gonna leave it now.
Yeah.
I was on something for a minute. But like, I don't know. I've kind of disliked the idea that artists shouldn't acknowledge negative criticism at all, or shouldn't take issue with negative responses, you know. But I kind of came to realize that with our account and everything, like, being as big as it is and having such a reach, like, it kind of comes across as attacking random people, which is not what we want to do. Like, I think we made peace with the possibility of people just totally not fucking with it, like, before we wrote a single note of the album.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I told you all, like, whenever we were like getting near the end of the process, I was like, you know, I get it. There's going to be negative opinions. And I mean, I'll even say that there are people who have had opinions that I've seen and I've been like, oh, that's disappointing. But like, I've said this before, but my disappointment is not like you don't need my approval to have an opinion about the album. And frankly, even despite that, it's like, I don't think that there's an opinion that could come out that would convince me that what we did wasn't great.
Yeah.
Cause I just,
I mean, I think
I'm so proud of the work.
I think a lot of the time negative criticism is validating because it's like, somebody's like, oh, it's like this and I don't like that. And I'm like, well, it's like that and I like that.
Yeah.
And what you're telling me is not that it's bad. What you're telling me is that I'm correct about what it is. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense.
And
yeah. More than anything, I just think it's cool that like people hate the record for the same reason that other people love it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's that, like, that has been cool to see.
It's been cool to see nobody agreeing on what's the best and worst songs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Every track on both ends of that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Awesome. Absolutely. And I've seen a lot of appreciation for stuff that I thought was going to be kind of sleepers, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like songs that like The Killer.
Yeah.
I love The Killer. That's one of my favorite songs on it. But
yeah.
I was like, this is so low key. And there's some other stuff that's so in your face. Like, I felt like people probably wouldn't pay attention to it, but it's been a lot of people's favorite.
Mm-hmm.
It's cool.
Hell yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, the album fucking rocks, so.
Yes.
No negative criticisms from us.
So is there any meaning behind the album title or cover art?
There's like five meanings.
All right. And only five.
Five that we know of.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So it kind of came for me just a obsession with the concept that that nature itself is a cycle of life and death and rebirth, and human culture is kind of an attempt to create like a stasis, you know, the materials that humans have invented, such as plastic, like do not die. They do not decay. They stick around forever. And in doing so, they cause other things to die. You know, that's one interpretation. Another is the idea like plastic as in like elastic, like changeable, malleable, you know, and the idea that like from death can spring life, which ties into the image of the whale fall, like a whale's corpse becoming an oasis in the bottom of the ocean, you know. And then of course, like I think what most people maybe interpret from it first is just the way that plastic is polluting the earth.
Yeah,
everybody is keenly aware of the presence of plastic, not just in the ocean, but within our bodies, you know. It is like very much a part of not just our culture, but like our physical selves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the art, I mean, do you want to talk about that a little bit, Dax? Because I have my interpretations of what it means, but if you want to.
I definitely want you to share your thoughts. I want to refrain from speaking too rigidly about it, I guess, because I'm always interested in hearing like what other people think of it and like letting them form their own meanings and opinions about it. But one thing,
whoa.
Dead now.
Like a flashbang.
The lights just went out.
Did someone throw a flashbang in the room? Is everyone okay?
Take us back to the abyss. So one angle that I had been thinking of. Thank you. Speaking of angles,
abyss angle. That's funny.
Sorry,
we interrupted it the light and the saying abyss angle.
The flashbang caught you off guard. Yeah.
One angle that I have on it, one of many, is the titular like abyss angel on the cover there. I won't speak too much about like what it is or what it isn't, but it kind of stems from this fantasy I have of creatures, rather than, you know, pollution ruining their habitats and stuff, like life finding a way to take the plastics within the environment and like assimilate them or use them in a way that like could benefit them. There's like these kind of the body of the creature is translucent and you can kind of see the environment through it, but inside it has these like squiggles inside of its wings. Guts. You can see its guts, and it's
an album about guts.
Yeah. absolutely. And
it's about how it's not just body horror, all body is horror.
Amen to that. So the idea of like a creature like this existing, you know, it on a surface level resembles an existing animal, a type of sea slug known as a sea angel or Cleone, but it lives much deeper, and it is a little bit more mysterious for that, but I like the idea of there being something that learns how to not only just deal with the pollution in its environment, but like use it to its advantage and like
thrive.
Yeah. So that is just something I haven't seen anybody kind of talk about. So putting that out there,
thriving,
it's like a light in the darkness. It's translucent. You can see it. It's inside. You know, I think it kind of is the embodiment of a lot of what we're trying to achieve with this record too. I also love, I've seen like a couple of people pointed out as like a biblical reference, mm-hmm. which, yes, that's what I meant, like, you know. I mean, there's intentional yeah. biblical references, yeah. you know, like I love like James Joyce, that was a big influence, mm-hmm. and he loves referencing literature and the Bible and, you know, just this intertextuality, which I think was a big part of my writing on this. And mm-hmm. if people find references that I did not plan but work, I'm happy.
Yeah. 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 Hell yeah. All right. So can you guys tell us a little bit about your writing process for the album?
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be a lot of me yapping.
Yeah, very, very similar to the first record. There was a lot of demoing, I mean, for sure. But yeah. this time, I think this time around, like the biggest difference is instead of like first record, Jay would sort of fully flesh out an idea before bringing it to us.
Yeah.
This time it was like, oh, I have like a chord progression, or I have like a riff, or
there's a lot of jamming.
Yeah, melodic. I have this melodic idea or something. Let's all get together and jam on it. And which was like how the latter part of the first record happened. Mm-hmm. Like yeah. the more and more Jonas and Jay and I vibed, like on the first record, the more and more we actually started writing together.
Because the first record was like, I have songs, I need a live band. And then it was like, oh, I need like
I need more songs.
Well, yeah. Well, then, okay, yeah. William and Jonas, like, you can play on the record. We'll put that together, you know. And then we started writing songs together. And yeah, this time it was like I had some songs that I had pretty fleshed out, like as demos when we were like mm-hmm. in quarantine and all that, and we yeah. weren't seeing each other in person. But a huge amount of it, yeah, it was, we would take an idea, jam on it for no joke like an hour straight, and then mm-hmm. take pieces of that and work with that, you know.
Jay would kind of construct it in the little music cave for a while, and then yeah. come out with an awesome music to show us. From my perspective, you go into your music shop and you
oh
come
yeah
out with awesome music.
I am a proud troglodyte.
Curious, and I don't know how else to ask it other than the amount of time between the first and the second record. Why was there such a gap?
Well, there was a pandemic.
True.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Half of that
yeah.
time.
Yeah.
And we are still in a pandemic, and mm-hmm. That kind of like plays, I don't know, that plays into like our entire life.
There was a whole year yeah. where we weren't seeing each other in person, and that's kind of mm-hmm. where 2020 went. I mean, we did some stuff that yeah. year, like, but it was all
10-15 and running.
Yeah, and yeah. we did like some covers around then. Like it was all kind of stuff that we were putting together remotely, and the process was very strange for us, you know. I out of all that, I think 10-15 was my favorite.
I think love 10-15.
That song was like a little bit of a breakthrough for me personally, I think, and mm-hmm. and like especially with like lyrics and everything. But
I think some of that stuff, by the way, is a, like a hindsight thing. Because yeah. like I don't know if you remember the mentality like start of pandemic, but people were like, oh, when's this, like, is it 2 weeks, a month, yeah. 2 months, mm-hmm. 3 months? Like, okay, we're in isolation right now, but that can't last very long. We're doing yeah. this so that we can like rapidly take care
it
of
it happened
this
to
thing.
Be right when our like yeah. career was starting too.
Yeah, we had just gotten back from our first ever like West Coast tour, like yeah. tour in general, but it just happened to be West Coast only.
But I think we are all people who are opposed to this sort of like modern mentality of like, as like an artist or content creator, you just need to constantly be feeding people little bits of content, you know. And really I am a person who loves to really get into the weeds and like spend a lot of time on the details, try every possibility, try to push mm-hmm. myself to new places. And my process and our process as a band is just one that just takes a lot of time, you know, which is kind of an old way of doing things. But I think it's just what, to me, makes music that I'm happier with, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. you guys are making
to feel that every detail is deliberated over, you know?
Yeah.
And feel that there's substance, you know?
You're making music that people clearly resonate with. And that's the most important thing. It doesn't matter if it comes out every 6 months or every 5 years. It doesn't fucking matter. People resonate with it.
It's been very interesting to see that too with this album, because we've said, and a lot of people have pointed out as well, is there's like definitively like a more abstract approach to it. Like there is meaning, but it's like much more obfuscated. Mm-hmm. And with the first record, it was easy for people to be like, oh yeah, I relate to like, you know, being alone in my bedroom, like waiting for answers, wasting time. You know, it's these very literal character portraits or whatever that people are like, oh yeah, that's just me, you know. Mm-hmm. But this time, like, there's been a lot of people who have like been like, I'm not sure I know exactly what you're saying, but I feel it. Like this is, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I don't know. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a lot of very nice compliments from people who have said that not only do they see themselves in it, but also that this sort of scattered narrative of it feels more like how they experience the world or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. That feels truer, which is all that I hoped for, really, you know.
It's awesome. Hell yeah.
Sure. So what song off this album took the longest to write, and which one is each your own personal favorite?
Let's start with the second half of that question first.
Personal favorite.
Yeah. Because, like, my personal favorite is The Killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's up there for me.
God.
Honest to God, it's a tie for me between Comatose and Puppy, which are, like, two extremes. Because like, to me, Comatose is this long-winded, like, it is, you know, it's kind of an album in itself, all the places it goes and everything. And
yeah.
I don't know. To me, it's kind of this manic thought spiral or something, you know. And I think that aspect of it is fascinating. But I think Puppy is this very concise, very straightforward statement of kind of the rest of the album's themes of like abuse of power and all that, you know. I think it's it just feels very concise in a way that I often have trouble being. It's very catchy.
I by the way, The Killer or Coelacanth, if I'm getting a second.
This is up there for me too.
I'm gonna get in Coelacanth's corner, because I think I could make a personal argument for almost any of these songs being like my number one favorite, but I'm gonna stand behind Coelacanth on this one, I think.
And it's not just because you wrote the piano.
It's not just because I wrote the piano at the beginning.
I was gonna say, that's like a baby.
I do. It is the one that I feel. I mean, it is like, because I mean the
song was a huge breakthrough for us. I feel like. I mean, it's always gonna be important to me because it felt like something that I didn't think we were capable of, and then we did it, and I was like, I felt we did a really good job. Yeah. What I was trying to be, you know.
I also think if I literally just like kind of close my mind and I'm just like, what music starts playing in my heart? I'm like, it's probably that one, because that one literally came out of me just like jamming. I mean, the very start of it, like I have the basic melody of that in me already. So I think it just feels like my favorite, even if it's not.
And I love the goodbye Mayfly section in that a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I love to be like, how long did I love you about a Mayfly?
That part,
it's like
gets
a
stuck
Mayfly
in my
lives a day, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, how much love can you have for something so temporary, you know?
Yeah.
What about you, Lane?
200.
Nice.
Yeah, that's
I love 200.
Wow, that's such a good answer.
I mean, Comatose is, like, kind of also up there, but it's, like, that's, like, to me, that's an easy one. That's like saying, I don't know, like, oh, cheeseburger, my favorite food. Like, cheeseburgers taste great.
Oh, cheeseburger, my favorite.
Yeah, it's just like it's so easy to be my favorite that I think about what I dig really deep on, and I like the inspiration behind 200. I like the tonal clash. I like the fact that we went
200 is one of the most political.
Yeah, I also like that we went so hard in
the most, but
I like that we went so hard in a direction for like an atmosphere with the mix in that song. Every song on the album has an atmosphere, but 200 really felt to me like almost like we were constructing a room and then putting the instruments in that room.
Yeah.
And that was a really
when
cool
I wrote
feeling.
That last part, I felt like Chopin.
The final like dark chord progression. Yeah. That is one of the moments in like writing and recording and stuff that like is kind of burned into me.
Yeah.
Because like I remember
I was there,
you know, when I wrote you going like we need to have like a big like dark chord progression at the end, and you walked over to the upright piano and you just started playing something.
That's right. I kind of just played that.
And I
fucking, I didn't take that long.
I was recording that, and you were just like, you were like, wait, this is it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I forgot about this. I was like, yeah, let's do something like Chopin, like maybe this. And then I just played it. I forgot. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. And you're like, this is it. This is it. And I was like, that's so good.
Also, I feel sold for entertainment. Desperation is riot control. When I wrote that, I was like, man, I'm channeling Jenny Holzer so hard. I fucking love it.
I also remember coming into your room, and I'm pretty sure William was there. I don't know if you were there, but I remember walking into your room and you being like, yeah, check out these horns that I added. And then you showed us the horn parts, and we were just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I love that Mingus big band stuff. I've just been ripping that off all over the album.
The horns for Motions, blew me away.
I mean,
Motions is so good too. Okay.
The CIA is my other favorite song.
Oh, cool. What, you want a second?
Which one took the longest?
Well, does Lane have a second?
Probably second one. It's hard.
Favorite.
Slip Under the Door.
Slip Under the Doors. Okay, cool.
That's my favorite too.
Okay. Jonas is gonna say all.
It changes every time I listen to it because there's always new things for me to discover and appreciate. But like, I think in my last listen through, it was Abyss Angel. Just like the second half of it, it really.
That's my favorite too.
No way.
Yeah. Wait, what are your two favorite?
The one I was just listening to, Slip Under the Door.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And I like Comatose. I'm not typically someone that likes super long songs, and that one clocks in at 10 minutes, but it just takes you on a journey, and I love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do we think Comatose was the one that took the longest to write?
Or Coelacan.
Because you showed that to us really early on.
If you want to get real, okay, yeah, it did take a while.
If you want to be literal, it's the CIA.
The CIA took us the longest.
That's true.
The CIA deliberated over for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
I changed it back and forth so much, and I never got anything out of it. It's pretty much the same song it was at the start.
With a metal breakdown in the middle.
Yeah.
You said this other places, but the CIA was like...
It was written before the first
record came out. Yeah. Jay showed it to me and Jonas in a practice space at one point before the first album.
We jammed on it before the year.
Yeah.
We spent a really long time on Comatose, and we also spent a really long time on Slip Under the Door, though.
Mm-hmm.
That one took us the longest time to figure out the structure.
Slip Under the Door took the longest time for structure. 200 also like almost got cut because we couldn't figure out the bridge.
200. Oh yeah,
because you kept being unhappy with like everything we were trying, and then not derogatorily. I mean, that's why I think our music is so good.
I mean, perpetual dissatisfaction is kind of a blessing and a curse. It always pushes you further, but then sometimes when you get where it should be, you're still unsatisfied.
Yeah, I mean, it's like tying into just the last question, sort of. Just like we're like finding the meeting point always, like the best compromise point between wanting to spend infinite time on it, wanting it to be out when it like feels like it can be, and also like only being able to spend a lot of our life on this, and still like having other life happening around the band and stuff.
There was a lot of stuff where I felt like I could have done more, and I just had to stop for my own sake, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's a point where you just have to be like, there's things I'm not happy with, but I'll just learn from it and do better next time, you know.
Yeah.
We've got big plans for what we're gonna do next, I think, too.
Yeah. Big things coming soon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, not soon.
Well, no.
we're gonna make Frank Ocean look like King Gizzard.
Oh my god. Jesus Christ.
That's great. So how'd the track list for the album come about? Did you guys write the opener be the opener, close be a closer, shuffle around and see what fits? What was that process like?
Yes.
Opener and closer were When I wrote Abyss Angel, there was like a year or two where I had that song pretty much, but I was like, this is not going to be the album. Like it's mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the, sometimes you write music to like put it out there, and sometimes you write music just to like do it, you know, and that song was kind of just a vent, you know. it wasn't something that I was like, oh, this is a song, you know. It was a catharsis for me, you know. And I think it ended up being because it was that, because it was like a diary entry or something. I was like, reluctantly, this probably needs to be the closer of the album. You know, everything is so obscured. You know, the meaning behind so much of it is just not that clear most of the time. You know, like it's a very reserved album, and like having this track where it's like you've ripped it open and gotten to the beating heart, you know. Like
that's that so was, yeah, sorry.
And you know, like that was really what that song was for us. Like I remember being like, okay, we need to use like no compression, no reverb, like it's got to sound like absolutely naked, you know. But anyway, original question.
But it wasn't written for the
once it was going to be on the album, there was not anywhere else it was going to be. Coelacanth was always going to be track one.
It wasn't, and we can get to that. I want to hear what Jonas is going to say.
I do remember a couple of.
I just want to hear your thing.
Oh no, I just think I hadn't heard you say that, Jay, about like that last bit kind of being like a journal entry. And that's just is really interesting to me, thinking about how the album starts with like a candid conversation that is still very obscured and like some of the most like immediately hard to parse what is being talked about, but it is literally just a conversation. And then Coelacanth having lyrics that are very like representative of the album being like just kind of a lot of imagery that is connected for a lot of it, and like I don't know, that's a cool lyrical journey on the album that you just illuminated for.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, that was always the intent, is it's meant to be very obscured, very very difficult, you know. And I don't know. Some people struggle with that, clearly, but
I do know that,
which is fine.
Yeah,
it's meant to be struggled with, is my point.
So at one point, Cul-de-sac was written to be the opener.
That's right,
because I added the intro beginning part. Because we were talking about like wanting to open this record way faster, like and be like in your face immediately, so that's why that's at the so beginning funny. It has that like drum part,
the opposite,
the like little drum roll that comes into the babble 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 babble, like just like straight into a song, and we're like, yeah, that's how we're gonna start the record, because the last one was really slow and it like built up. And then like at some point,
still the first album is more immediate though.
You've got
this big, clear, catchy chorus in the first track.
This one,
it's like the first track. I mean, it's like, if you know the album Laughingstock by Talk Talk, I was pretty much ripping that off. And that is a very opaque album, you know, that's kind of the place I wanted to start, where it's like, is something bad has happened here, but I have no fucking idea what, you know.
So Cul-de-sac was written, like, we added that section at the beginning to make it the opener, and then we're like, no.
Yeah,
no, but we still liked that section, so we're like, leave that section, but like it's not the opener anymore.
I'm trying to remember what our inspiration was there. I remember talking about Bob O'Reilly with Lane's guitar part.
For the cul-de-sac.
Yeah,
I said that I really liked how Gami, like Origami Angel, opened a lot of their tracks with just like this like really static, like bam.
In sync chord hits,
that kind of thing.
See, so you were thinking that, I was thinking Steely Dan.
I was thinking Gami.
Cul-de-sac, people will think there's something wrong with me if I say this, but that was Steely Dan plus My Bloody Valentine. That's what it is in my mind.
I love that. You're in that headspace, and then I'm over here going like, "Hell yeah, Origami Angel!"
No, see, this is why worlds. I love that we don't have the same music taste.
Yeah,
because we're always seeing shit from different angles, and we always try to make it work from all those angles. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
like the part of the CIA that I always call the Primus section that you and Leonard call the
Dillinger Escape Plan.
Yeah,
it's just Dillinger Escape. Like,
yeah,
you gotta. I think as an artist, you have to be really comfortable with just doing like cheap pastiche, you know, and that's what that lyric is about. Literally, that is what that lyric is about, is people potentially accusing anything of being a ripoff on the album. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's all that art is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's built on the bones of giants, like a whale fall oasis, you know.
There's a really good recent video from YouTuber Tom Ska, not Tom Scott, but Tom Ska, about plagiarism, that kind of talks about that.
It's a little bit of a response to the H-Bomber video.
Yeah.
Oh.
And to finish out the answer to that question, yes. By the way, the track list, Jay eventually like took it to like, did like sort of arrange things in 100 different ways.
Yeah.
Like trying to figure out.
And
exactly...
I listened to stuff back to back, and there would be songs where the starts and ends were informed by what came before and after, you know?
It yeah.
Was, mm-hmm. Always the album was the medium, you know. It was like, this is not something to be picked apart, this is something to listen to front to back. It's like a movie made of these disparate scenes, you know. That's really,
yeah.
So the track list informed the songwriting a lot of the time.
Yeah,
you know.
And when we did figure out that Coelacanth was going to be the opener, it was like, it was, we used to do these long like 6-hour writing practicing days.
Yeah.
In the middle of like sort of lockdown pandemic time, like after we moved in together, because we were just like, well, we want to get like a lot of writing done, let's just schedule 6-hour practices and stuff, which were cool, but it was a little, we were whelmed. I remember one of them was specifically like, we're picking the opening track today.
Yeah,
like we're figuring that out. Either we're picking it or we're writing it. Mm-hmm. And we discussed Puppy opening the record.
Yeah,
we just like, there was like a lot of things, and then finally like Coelacanth was thrown out, and I remember us not vibing on it. And then I said, well, what if we open with the sample?
Yeah,
of Jonas playing like keyboard in our apartment, and like Lane is talking to
that was
my brother in
the
background.
That was the first time the song was ever played. Or, yeah, I mean, first time it was ever recorded, at least, because mm-hmm. Jonas, you wrote that on a keyboard, mm-hmm. you recorded it, and you sent that and said, hey, here's a good idea for a song. I remember listening to it and hearing it, thinking that the conversation going on was very interesting, and also mm-hmm. that it seemed to sync up with the piano.
I was probably subconsciously playing to like the rhythm of Lane.
Oh, sure.
And it just, you know, I guess it's just where our heads were at, but the conversation really happened to tie into a lot of what the album is about, you mm-hmm. know, talking about like the self-destructing Banksy piece and the Unisonus and all mm-hmm. that. And two things that I love about that, actually. One, you got like a Markiplier mm-hmm. reference, right?
I love that. Like, one person got mad about the Markiplier reference, like, keep video games out of my music. I'm like,
my favorite.
I think that the worst thing that anything that's going for high art can do is to like ignore low art, like you know,
or my favorite
quote unquote I say low art not as a disparaging term.
My favorite reaction to anything on the album is anybody seeing the lyrics of what I'm saying, what's been transcribed,
uh-huh.
and mm-hmm. anybody being like, why do they have this person talking in the beginning?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, it was something that was, like, intentionally recorded. And I was like, you think anybody, like you think that I rehearsed talking like this? I mean, you hear me right now. I
can barely talk at all.
Oh, the other thing I like about it is that the first thing you say is we act like artists.
Yes, yeah.
Which is really, I love self-deprecation.
Well, and that's the thing is that I like, I just got to say that, like, I get it. I get it. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Markiplier is like, you know, the most avant-garde amazing YouTuber ever. No, but like Markiplier was like very entertaining for me, and sometimes still is. Mm-hmm. But the thing was, is that I just remember, you know, Unisonus was just such a weird project that like had such like a very like kind of noble artistic concept of like temporary art being destroyed and whatnot.
Yeah.
But half the videos were like, oh, Markiplier watches while Ethan attempts to saw a 2x4 in half, yeah. and he doesn't know how to use tools. And it's like all like ridiculously simple, like funny yeah. entertainment. And then their last live stream, I remember there's just being this moment that like, I like, they acknowledged on the live stream. They're like, yeah, there's people who have archived this. There's people who got tattoos of Unisonus and whatnot. So like, even though the channel is going to be gone, it's still going to live on in a weird way. Mm-hmm. And I just remember at some point for some, like, and this just happens with some art, I just got like this like flood of like it's like when you see the most amazing scene in a movie. But this sounds really weird, you know, being about Markiplier and whatnot, but like it's just like I got goosebumps for a second and got like teary-eyed, because I was like, oh my god, these people just made all this stuff for a year. And then they gave like these like fake eulogies for each yeah. other about like what they appreciate about yeah. each other, and had all these funny moments. And at the end of it, it's like, I remember sitting there and watching them hit the delete button, the live stream ending.
Uh-huh.
And I just like sat there for like 5 minutes being like, damn, why is this making me so emotional? Like in my head, I was like, this is such like again, I wasn't putting yeah. judgment on it, but I was like, it's just like a YouTube channel. Like why am I, but like, it was one of those moments where it's like, it was kind of a emotional breakthrough, I think, for me, where I was yeah. just like, I just realized how much, like, it doesn't matter how stupid people view a piece of art or anything like that.
It's, I mean,
like,
there's if artistic it hits value you... in everything. It's like why fucking Warhol painted soup cans.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's know? it's like if it hits you in the right way, yeah. there's yeah. something to it, and it's worth thinking about that, talking about it, and expressing that, even if other people don't get it, even if other people are like, oh, it's oh, Markiplier, oh, Five Nights at Freddy's, but like,
yeah,
it's no, like
I vibe with you. I get it. I love.
Can't wait yeah. to rip this as the sample for the next album.
that monologue is opening the next record.
I love taking things seriously that don't demand it, and I love reading too deep into things. Those are my two mm-hmm. biggest hobbies.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. That's next entirely question. What I love.
That's the track list is the way that it's been. All right.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So would you guys be able to tell us where your headspace is at while you're creating this record?
Bad.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty bad. It's
been a rough few years, I think, overall.
Can I just mention that there was a terrible period, like in particular,
yeah.
where long story short, I won't get into too many of the details, but because everybody was in quarantine, we were like on unemployment and whatnot because we yeah. couldn't work.
Not
and
me. I wish.
And and some very upsetting circumstances that later came to light led to a whole thing where all of a sudden I didn't get unemployment for like 6 months because they withheld it all and audited me saying that like I wasn't supposed to be getting that money. And there was an entire court case. They sent me like three thick vanilla envelopes full of like information that I had to sift through. And I was just so confused and didn't understand. And now it all makes sense. And it made me very angry, but it was just like that entire period. I was like, I had to prepare for this court case that I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
I wasn't getting like any unemployment. So I was like, ah, crap. And, you know, like I have a pretty supportive family, and we also like, you know, we have a bit of money as a band just in case of these situations. But it was still just a moment where I was just like, it's like, what, like, how are, like, if I didn't have this,
mm-hmm.
if,
well, you'd be screwed. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I would have been out on the streets, and it's like yeah. stuff like that. Like,
yeah. I mean, we were stressed out. We were stuck inside, you know, this whole world's falling apart. Like,
have you seen Bo Burnham's Inside?
we're having to work day jobs for a lot of it. Like,
yeah.
Like there is a period where we were able to be on unemployment, or some of us were, yeah. but like at least some of us were working the entire time, and most of us were working. Like
I worked the whole pandemic.
I think at a certain point the music itself was becoming a stressor too, just trying to get it done. And I certainly got inside my head about it.
Yeah, you more than us, but yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I just truthfully, because you were you would like go to your room like and work on the record for like 9 hours and then play some Fortnite and then go to bed and get up the next day, do the same thing.
I did play a lot of Fortnite, you know.
Making
like this, it can feel like losing again and again, and sometimes you just gotta go like kill some Tinder Bolts, you know?
Gotta get a number one victory in Fortnite.
I gotta say, also, it was the day job thing was really weird too, because the first day job I picked up ended up being kind of the reason why we all got COVID.
Why we all got COVID? Yeah.
We booked one show. We were gonna do Youth Pride in Utah, and we got all the way out there, and Lynn was like, "Guys, I got some bad news."
Yeah, we woke up the next day after traveling for 13 and a half hours the day before.
And we were like, "We did a whole tour to get COVID."
Here's the messed up thing: is that I was doing like Uber Eats courier stuff, so it's like. The only thing that could have happened was that while I was in an elevator with someone, I got like, and but it was messed up because the night before I was like, I was telling y'all that like my vision was like kind of wavy, and I was like, yeah. I was like, oh, what's going on? I was like, I must be more tired than I thought. And yeah. then I woke up in the morning.
Been working a lot.
Yeah. And then instantly in the morning, I was like, oh no.
Yeah, that was miserable. That was probably a low point in my life. Like yeah. which in the grand scheme of things, yeah. not the worst low point.
No,
but...
it was our first show for a long time though, you know, and
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
we did one show last year and now we're about the tour, like our last proper tour was 2021.
Yep.
With yeah. the band proper, I mean.
home is where?
yeah, I don't know. It'll be weird because yeah. Touring is scary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I'm
people ask me how do you deal with the stage fright, and I say I don't.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
I'm just I scream and cry.
You have to.
You have to do it scared.
You have to do it scared. Yeah. That's all you got.
When
I don't know.
Stage fright, I go la 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 la. I can't hear you. And then everybody's like, wow, I didn't know that was the lyrics.
Yeah.
that's new.
On stage, I play a note on my bass, and that's how I get it out. So if you're going to play a note on my bass on stage, I'm really scared.
Once the music starts, it's like an out of body experience, though, you know? Like, yeah. Maybe you're scared, but you're not there. You
no, yeah.
That's like performing theater, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't suffer from stage fright necessarily. Yeah. And in fact, like, acting's way easier than playing the drums.
Mm-hmm.
Playing the drums live is a horrendous experience. And
acting is just like talking.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Actually fucking talking.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm acting all the time.
Yeah, acting like a drummer. that's something my parents, not my parents, but we had an acting friend in college. This is a tangent, I'm so sorry, I'll be quick. We had a friend in college who was an actor whose parents did not necessarily approve of that, and they were like, we want you to do something else with your life. And they were like, you know, like, and you know what, like, go be an accountant. Uh-huh. And you can, and the world is your stage. You can act like you're a good accountant, and act like,
that's you can, crazy.
You can act like your life stream was to be an accountant, and they were very serious, and I was always
that's
just like
fucking bleak,
yeah,
yeah.
Anyway, so that's how we felt.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
I think that all of the tangents kind of summarize the headspace of the record when you kind of think about it.
I mean, this is how we write music, so
yeah. Well, and I will say also, like, I do sorry I
do you think we haven't had enough tangents?
Well it's not a tangent. This is not directly answering the question.
Okay.
I just want to say that yes, there were a lot of really bad things, but I think that there were a lot of things that like were also kind of good. I got this, and they're really small things. I got really into making broth. And
oh, yeah.
that happened because you two cook so much.
You two be Jay and Dax.
Yeah. Jay and Dax. Yeah, sorry. Jay and Dax cook so much that they would have just a ton of like veggie things like left over and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I would make broths from that veggie stuff and whatnot. And that was an incredibly like it's a boring thing, but it's like I really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed getting to spend more time with y'all. And despite everything that house put us through, I think it was a good experience.
Yeah,
I will also add, like, during that time, the band / house got me the 5-string bass guitar for I think a birthday present.
Yeah.
That you hear on I think every track on the album. And William and my partner also
got out of that
house, my acoustic guitar. Like there were wins because we were together. But I'm glad. Oh my God, that house was gonna kill us.
That house was haunted.
Oh.
Like
oh,
like the obnoxious like postmodern sense. Like it was haunted.
There were trees growing into the foundation of the house.
Oh my god! Like yeah. I moved my bass amp after a while, and the corner
there was
corner,
like black mold on it too. You know?
Oh my god!
You know, like
like a root and like
our
a,
landlord
a
would not take care of it.
Going through that, I dealt with as I could.
Y'all are letting me say a lot of weird stuff. Sorry, so, like, did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that in the Bible? Did you know that?
Go on.
Black mold is referenced in the Bible.
Whoa.
And it's described as leprosy of a house.
Wow.
Our house.
I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I had to move out of my childhood home because of black mold too, you know.
Whoa.
And I definitely think a lot about the way a house can like rot, or the way a house can swallow you while dying. You know, it's
somebody
died in our bedroom too.
Oh my god. Okay, so what wasn't wrong with this house?
Someone
has probably died in almost every room. As long if a house has been around,
the earth is a haunted house.
The earth is a haunted house. Yeah, there we go.
That's an album name. Write it down.
Earth haunted.
What?
Earth haunted.
Next question.
How do you guys recommend your fans to listen to this album for the first time? Should you do it in the car with friends and talk with headphones on? Is it a workout album, party album? What do you guys personally recommend?
I have a specific
Talk about Unus Honest.
I have a specific scenario that I had in mind the whole time that I was making it. You got to listen on headphones on your laptop in bed at 3 a.m. Underwater. And especially if you live with your parents and your parents hate you.
Okay. Cool. That's the ultimate. I can't
believe. Does everyone agree?
Yeah, I would say so.
I think if you could listen to it like deep underwater, yes, but I don't think most of us are going to be able to do that.
I think sounds your first expensive. Listen should be on headphones.
Yeah.
Some good headphones.
Yeah.
And I think that subsequent ones, you should try listening to it in as different of an environment as possible. Mm-hmm. I think that while most people may try to listen to it in their car on their first time, I encourage you to listen to it on headphones first and then car second time.
Yeah.
Because
never listen to music in your car.
Yeah.
Never listen to music. Take.
Well, don't listen to music.
Yeah, okay.
Never exclusively listen to music. Yeah. If you listen to music in your car and you think it sounds bad, listen to it on something else because cars just bad.
I used to
do like the pizza deliveries, and I'd listen to Death Grips all the time because I just need that kind of music working a job like that. Well, no, I would be listening to Death Grips in my car, and then like my engine would have a problem, and I'd be like, I never noticed that in this song.
Wow.
Actually, honestly, Death Grips might be one of the like one of the bands where it might be a more enjoyable experience to listen to it in a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you kind of need to go fast, you know.
The only time you should absolutely listen into the car the first time is if you're one of those people that has like 9 of those like jet engine sized bass speakers in your back that like shake, that like when you record a video of it, it shakes the entire camera. Like, then you can do that.
I love this question was a fucking layup that we could have just moved on from, and we cannot help ourselves.
Here's the thing. So when you, I mean,
no, the William, the next one is an absolute layup that if you guys I spend 20 minutes on it, I will be amazed. I'm just putting it out there.
Give us the.
I was gonna say, I just realized that what y'all in having us on this podcast, you have reawoken the Glass Beach podcast that we have, kind of have in stasis right now.
I mean,
and we're kind of in Glass Beach podcast energy mode right now. We just can't shut up, and I love it.
It's like our forever stasis.
Yeah. What was the thing I was gonna say? I don't know.
Before I
don't give yourself tinnitus.
Yeah, don't give yourself tinnitus.
It sucks. I hearing always hear the sound going, roll. And I'm just like, man, shut up.
Man. if the car is the only place that you can listen to music loudly, listen to it in your car though.
Yep.
Like, listen, scream your heart out, fucking sing.
But but at like 5 p.m., you gotta fucking drive and shit sucks. Just like put on the album and just crank that.
Yeah, and if you gotta puff on your weed vape a little bit.
I guess. Hold on.
Not while you're driving.
Maybe not. Maybe wait until you're parked.
Not while you're driving.
Yeah.
Parody.
Yeah.
Parody. That's in Fortnite.
And if you see a truck with a trailer bed that's slanted on the side of the road, remember, you got to do it.
I have
give us your music question.
There are details that I feel like I've focused on more listening in my shitty Bluetooth earbuds than I listened on my good headphones. So I think listening to it on a variety of methods will be valuable.
Also, I've heard the vinyl is really great, so that's an option.
Yeah.
Okay. Good
Where
plug.
Can you get the vinyl?
Runforcoverrecords.com. Yeah. I think.
There you go.
And I don't probably know. Some stores.
It's a Glass Beach store. Yeah, and you can get it at some record stores,
Or you can go to glassbeach.band, look at my beautiful CSS, HTML, and JavaScript, click on a few hyperlinks, and then buy it.
Yep.
Beautiful.
Glassbeach.band, that's the best
I am one. Our web developer, among many other things, and I hate it.
We're many.
I hate JavaScript. Okay, next question.
Okay, So this one should be super, super quick. Off top of your heads, I want you guys to describe this album for new listeners in three words. No more, no less.
Okay.
15
three words each.
Total?
Three words each. Three words each.
Yeah.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
No.
Three words. Plastic death.
No.
No. Describing the record.
No, I refuse.
Not breaking it into syllables.
I refuse.
Describe it. This is actually the hardest question so far.
Yeah, describing three words.
Stygian colors.
Okay.
Is one. That's
two words, Lane.
Damn it. Stygian.
I'm not good at being concise, you know.
Yeah.
Let's get all three of your words together. Otherwise, we're going to get all confused.
Stygian.
No, I mean, like, before you say one, make sure you've got all three.
I'll say eclectic, ambiguous, ambitious.
Solid.
Many syllables.
Yeah. A lot of big words.
Hitting the word count, yeah.
I don't know.
I got it.
I've used many
words. Oh, you got it? You got it?
Yeah. Stygian.
Uh-huh.
Hyperluminous.
Oh.
And self-destructive.
Oh.
Nice.
Oh, wow. Oh.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. All right.
The album is?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like a fucking Mission Impossible file.
You know, every time you play a vinyl record, you cause damage to it.
Yeah.
And to yourself.
That's true.
Yes, every time you play a vinyl record, it puts microplastics into the air.
Well, every song has like a self-destructive thing where it tears itself apart. It glows in certain sections, and Stygian is kind of just related to colors, where it's like...
Well, know, Stygian, like the river Styx. Like, it's the high...
Related to death and... Yeah.
You know? Aren't we all?
These are some great three words.
<What is happening? laughs>
Just pick any three words from the last like hour or however long it's been.
Got wet, weird, and wistful.
Hell yeah.
No, stick with the theme.
Mysterious abyss.
Gay.
Good.
All right, all right.
Optimistic.
Sorry. Optimistic.
Oh, cool. There you go.
Okay. I was gonna do hopeful.
Love.
Mm-hmm.
Mysterious abyss love.
Yeah.
Aww.
I'm gonna say heavy, ethereal, and flying.
Flying.
I'm going flying just to get a different kind of word.
They're in the abyss though.
You know, flying's opposite swimming.
There are parts in the album, and especially the end, where it is the most that listening to music has made me feel a little bit like I am flying. Like my soul is soaring.
You're gonna give yourself the bins like that.
So can you guys talk about any particularly challenging or standout moments from the creation of the record, positive or negative?
Yeah.
Tracking drums was hell. Like just like getting it to sound good.
I think a standout moment in the development was this was late. Like we had most of the album written. We were figuring out we need like a section on Comatose or something.
Yeah.
And I had gotten my little mini MIDI keyboard. And we had started using it in practice. And I got this was like dirty synth tone. And Jay was like, wait, everyone, hold on. Jonas, we're gonna play Comatose up to this part. When it gets to this, Jonas, can you just like play D with like this rhythm, like right at this part? And it's that part you hear in the song. It's like bam, 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 bam. Just the moment of like try that.
Yeah.
And like getting to try that all together and be like, yeah, I think we're gonna do something like that.
Yeah.
That was really fun.
Yeah.
There are some moments during the production that really stand out to me.
Yeah.
One of them I always talk about is the end of the production on guitar song. We needed some reverb on the drums that transitioned the song well into the sounds of Rare Animal at the beginning. And we loaded up a reverb plugin. We were scrolling presets and we saw one that said Thunderstruck. And I was like, ha, Thunderstruck. And I clicked it and then we played it and then it was perfect and we didn't have to adjust anything. Another thing was when we threw saturation on the end of Slip Under the Door.
Oh yeah,
and just everything just sounded fucked up, and we were like, "That's amazing." And then the last thing I have to say is Abyss Angel. Whenever we like just threw everything in there, threw the most bare bones mixed up on, and we were like, "Wow, I mean, it's kind of almost already done.
Yeah. I've programmed my own synthesizer to make the end of Abyss Angel, you know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, no, it's funny, Lane, mentioning that the mixing really did take a while, and I think a lot of it can be summed up as, like, you making things sound better and then me being like, I want it to sound like shit, though. Like, make it fuck up. Like, I want to scare people. Like,
I also...
You know, I think...
No, please.
Oh, to answer the question about, like, difficult stuff, though, I think that was the original question.
Or positive or negative.
Yeah. Positive or negative.
Positive or negative, yeah.
I spent more time on vocals than anything else that I performed on it. Like, mm-hmm. It really, you know, and so, so much of it is in this, like, extremely delicate place that's really hard to get a grasp on, like, just above a whisper, just above, like, a moan or whatever, you know? And just like kind of getting right down the middle with that was, mm-hmm. was really tough. Like, you know, a lot of people have asked me about, like, a lot of the screaming vocals and stuff like that on there. And I'm like, that was easy. That was like 5 takes, slip under the door. Like, mm-hmm. the stuff that was like 200 takes is all the stuff that's like this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's extremely tough to get a grasp on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I mean,
you get the sound just perfectly obscured.
Yeah, I did a good bit of vocal coaching and a lot of practice on my own over the course of mm-hmm. making it too. I've got a friend who does a like opera and also screamo.
Scropra, we like to call it.
Oh. I mean, he makes Scrimo, everything in between. All kinds of. he makes all kinds of music. And he's like one of my oldest and best friends, you know. So. It was a very, very nice experience. So that was a good part. Mm-hmm. The I'd say the part that was stressful was like doing 200 takes in a row in my mm-hmm. closet, you know?
Yeah.
Which all the vocal, well, nearly all the vocals on the album were recorded in my closet, which I just thought was very fitting.
Mm-hmm.
Something that was unique to this album for us as well so far was getting to, like, it's been so long since this happened, I have so much distance from it, but like getting to play a handful of the songs from this album on our last tour,
yeah,
while we were still like developing the songs, and like they were pretty much in their final state, but like yeah. there's a lot of stuff that really cemented it into our bodies and just like into how we wanted to do the songs that came from that 2021
I remember
tour.
That being such a weird thing because I was like, what the fuck are people gonna think about this? Like
mm-hmm.
And it wasn't even like the weirdest, it was CIA, Rare Animal, Motions, and then we did 200 and Cul-de-sac like mm-hmm. once or
sometimes
twice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah but it was mostly those three songs, and people were pretty receptive to it, you know? It was
yeah
cool, like
I mean the thinking about you in the middle of Rare Animal like always made
I figured
people,
that one would connect with
made them go wacky
emo.
Made them
so real reclaimers, proclaimers.
I wasn't sure what people would think about Motions in the CIA on that tour. But
yeah,
they really seemed to fuck with it, and it gave me a little more confidence in it. You know,
yeah,
people really liked that breakdown at the end of the CIA. And actually, something that's been very cool is seeing like a lot of like hardcore bands fucking with this record, because I was like so mm-hmm. worried people were gonna call us genre tourists or something.
Mm. mm-hmm. Yeah, it was cool getting a shout out from Kyle Stowboys.
Yeah, and Jill.
Yeah.
Love
yeah.
those guys.
Hell
yeah,
that's
yeah,
awesome.
Kyle Stowboys. Mm-hmm.
Metallica.
I mean, actually read that right now.
Yeah, yeah, thanks Metallica for telling us that we're the best band ever.
Oh,
we should.
Kyle Stowboys.
Yeah, that's why I was like, oh shit. Yeah, I'm actually repping them right now. Yeah.
Oh shit.
Yeah. For anyone just listening, they're wearing a Kallus Cowboys shirt.
Yeah.
In case you missed it, I'm wearing a Kallus Cowboys shirt.
I think we've done a lot in our interviews to talk about Metallica, though, talking about how much mm-hmm. we love Saint Anger.
Oh yeah. Saint Anger is one of the most like prevalent influences on this album, I would say.
No joke. Actually, yeah.
Saint Anger...
not in sound, but just in that talking about it, like really made us understand art more.
Yeah, it's
Saint Anger is the perfect good on paper album. I think you describe it and it sounds like it's Metallica's In Utero, and then you listen to it and it is not that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
This is like starting a conversation about Kanye.
Yeah.
We'll be talking for hours.
Oh no, I'm not gonna miss
one thing.
I was just gonna say it's that
you also that picture with JPEG Mafia?
Yes, yeah. Lane.
I love learning about new metal bands.
Lane's
my favorite musician.
the
There's a quote, and I can't remember who it's from ever, but they're like, don't just go see good movies, go see bad movies, read yes. bad books, redo this and whatnot. And it's like, that's my thing. Zanger fucking sucks.
John Waters,
but I don't know. I never remember who it's by. But
no, there's a video of John Waters where he's saying like his advice to young filmmakers is to go watch good and bad movies. That was part of
it. All right, it's probably John Waters.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
Pink Flamingo.
All of that means to say that that Saint Anger listening to that.
Yeah.
Keys me into a lot of stuff that I don't want my music to sound like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For this question, I want you guys to picture you're on tour, you're at a gas station for a rest stop, you're going in, and what is your snack of choice?
On tour.
Oh.
Snack of choice on tour, going into a rest stop.
Pickle in a bag like Nicki Minaj likes.
And we love Nicki Minaj.
Oh, yeah. That is privileged information. I shouldn't say that. My brother used to work at a huge music studio in Hollywood, like at the lowest level there. His job was basically to fetch shit for celebrities, and he had to go buy a bunch of pickles for Nicki Minaj. That's all.
Oh, this is literally privileged information.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, you can cut that.
I don't know. Do you cut?
Or you can change the proper nouns.
We do cut. We do cut. Okay. We can
okay.
cut.
Yeah, maybe cut that.
I don't know.
Or just like overdub it, obviously, and have Jay say Jonas Newhouse instead.
Also, yeah.
If we just want to take that answer from the top, because Jay did kick it off, that makes life a lot easier with the
honest
editing.
Honest to God, I am addicted to salt and vinegar chips, even though I do not enjoy eating them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all.
So my answer depends on what part of the country we're in, honestly, mm-hmm. because I found out on the last U.S. tour that I actually really like boiled peanuts.
I was just remembering.
Oh my god! Too. Yeah, when we were in the South.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Zapp's chips are a favorite.
Yes.
Voodoo chips.
Ew.
Voodoo Heat. Yeah, Voodoo Heat Zapp's. That's actually my go-to chips. I think. If they have them,
I like to snag an Arizona or like a Gatorade.
Yeah,
and then
when a can when appropriate.
Yeah, Yoo-hoo in a can when appropriate. Mm-hmm. And then also, I'm a sucker for Reese's pretty much all times. I'll snag mm-hmm. myself a little Reese's and smack it in my mouth.
Oh, yeah, we're talking candy. I like peanut M&Ms.
Well, yeah, I don't really get like snacks. I always get candy. Yeah. I'm like, I got a little sweet tooth.
Yeah,
I get a trail mix, and I like it to have peanuts, and I like it to have like chocolate and or an M&M type thing in there.
See
and then I get like those little fruit and cheese pastry things.
See, it depends on where we're stopping at, but if they have them, Arizona specifically the RX Energy Herbal Tonics, the golden one with the running guy on it. If they don't, then a Dr. Pepper. Yeah. If it's at Bucky's, gain a pulled pork sandwich. I'm just gonna fucking do it.
Yeah.
And then you can do whatever you want forever. Yeah, I mean, it's true. And then if it's not Bucky's and it's most likely like a Love's or a Pilot's, I'm gonna look for one of those fucking like dessert Oreo chocolate cups they have. Because those, I don't know what the fuck they do to those, but like even the cheapest gas station, if they have those, I'm like, it's going to kick ass every fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have those, then they might have the Nemo cakes, and I get those also.
Something I got to say, I actually did eat a good bit of candy on tour, because on tour, like eating kind of becomes entertainment. The tour is the only time I ever drink a Dr. Pepper because I was bored.
Yeah. I like gummy sharks when I'm driving. Mm. Like when I'm driving the the tour van.
Hey, what's the deal with those? Like
what's the deal with gummy sharks?
don't they like, I swear to God, those never have the same brand, but they're always the same thing.
Yes.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they're so good.
Yeah, they're so good. Yeah. I actually had one recently that was bad.
Oh. Do you have a giant one that you're?
Oh yeah, we're putting
potentially
that off.
Sharing
we're
with
gonna,
your brother.
Yeah, we're gonna.
They,
do that.
I think the giant shark's so big, even they can't eat it.
Oh. Yeah,
see, like a giant gummy is like at that point you might as well just like eat an animal.
It's like, it's like half a shark.
Yeah,
we had
like you're gonna really get in there and like handle it with your jaws and everything. Like you might as well be eating a rabbit, you know.
My brother got us this gummy thing at a gas station recently. That was like because it was novelty. I mean, the gummy shark is one of them, but the other thing was it was shaped like a breakfast. So it was like it was bacon and then a waffle with butter on it and then eggs.
Do you ever feel like our entire culture is a facade, William?
Yeah, yeah. What's worse is we started with the waffle one because we were like, what's this all going to taste like? And the waffle one tasted like a waffle with like, and it had a horrible, like overpowering, like syrup taste.
What the fuck?
And it was terrible. And we were like, oh shit, they made it taste like the breakfast and it's really bad.
I had a bacon and bacon and syrup flavored soda once and it was pretty good actually.
Damn.
I like avant-garde soda. Next question.
Interesting. Do we want to dive into that more? Is there an avant-garde soda that you hated?
Oh yeah, buffalo wing.
Oh
no, I used to live in Laguna Beach, and there was this store there called Rocket Fizz that I think closed years ago, but they had a whole section for just really strange soda flavors, and I made it my mission to try all of the weirdest ones, and most of them were terrible. But I am being so serious about calling it avant-garde, like I have to respect being in the food industry and going out of your way to make something that tastes unpleasant. Like that is the mark of a true artist, in my opinion.
I found, just related to what you're saying, Jay, and I just need your perspective on this if you've had it, but I found in Pasadena a place that has a similar thing for like potato chips, and they have peach beer flavored potato chips there. Have you had anything like this? Do you think you'd like it? That's my
peach. Wait, peach beer flavored?
Peach beer. So the potato chip flavored like a peach.
Flavored
like a
beer
peach, flavored? Peach
flavored?
Yes. Peach flavored beer flavored potato chips.
You know, we
they were really good.
We had this thing of peach rings, and on the back it said, "We don't taste like peaches. Peaches taste like us." And I like meditated on that like a Zen koan for like a whole day.
Oh my god! Two more snacks that deserve a mention: fruit cups, and when we're in like the, what is it, like the Midwest, maybe like Wisconsin or something? Cheese curds.
Cheese curds. Yep. The old Mitty Dubs.
If I want to gamble, I grab some gas station sushi.
Gas station burrito for me if I want the whole card of a bad time.
It's like playing the lottery, but like
if you win, it's just you don't get sick.
Yeah, best case you get no money. Worst case, like the IRS comes after you.
See, I'm playing biological strategy with like my body because when I eat that stuff, it's so that I'll force my body to like take a break from driving after a certain amount of time. Because if I don't, then I'll just sit for a while and then I'll be like, why is my whole body feel like it's glued to the seat? Versus if I've got to stop because I ate something terrible every now and then, it's like I'm forcing my body to stop. You know?
See, what I'm
That's
doing
a
right
horrible
now,
way to treat yourself.
What I'm doing right now.
That's a sign of a lack of self-respect.
Yeah. 24/7, 365. I'm eating like I'm on tour. Uh-huh. That's how I live my life.
You're training.
Yeah,
you're training at all times.
Yeah, I'm eating like shit. I'm like the Princess Bride, dude. I'm like, I'm gonna slowly poison myself every day so that when the poison does hit, I'm fine.
Hey, I'm glad I'm eating meat again because being vegetarian on tour was kind of awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, that was actually all the questions we have today. Is there anything that you guys would like to plug?
So the tour in like mid late March that goes through to like April 21st as well. We're hitting
US
a bunch of cities, full US, sort of.
Only hitting the good states.
Yeah, if we're not playing your state, it's because we don't like you personally.
Yeah.
And no, of course not.
Yeah, that'll be cool. We're going out with Arcadia Gray and Fleece Kawasaki. Both cool, and we're excited.
Please come bring a mask, a KN95 or better. We're doing a lot to try to make this safe for the people who are going, including us.
Yeah, COVID is real and still ever present. We are in the middle of an ongoing pandemic, and you should take care of yourselves and your loved ones and your personal lives, but especially if you're going to come to a concert with 500 to 1,000 other people.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you have COVID or you have recently had COVID, do not come to our concert.
Don't come to our show, please. We really appreciate it. It will mean a lot to us if you weren't there. If you have COVID.
Yeah.
If you're sick.
Otherwise, come. Please.
Sick. Otherwise, show us.
Have a good time. We'll play some music. You know, we'll get on. We'll walk on stage. We will play some songs. We will say thank you, everybody, for coming out tonight.
And we'll leave.
We will leave.
And we'll leave.
And if you see me, I'm not going to sign your copy of Catcher in the Rye.
No? No Catcher in the Rye?
I will sign anything else.
Okay, got it.
All right.
All right. Well,
will you sign my COVID?
sign my negative test result?
Yeah. If you bring a negative test result, don't, because that's gross. Throw that away. that has your biology on it. I don't want it. And then the record is out. So Plastic Death everywhere. You can buy stuff.
Go listen anywhere besides Spotify.
Yeah,
buy it on our Bandcamp.
Actually, anywhere besides Spotify, YouTube Music is worse than Spotify. Even.
Okay,
but
don't listen.
But whatever, just don't listen to the record.
Buy it if you're going to listen to it. Bandcamp.
You can listen for free on Bandcamp.
Hey, if you want to know like what's wrong with every method of listening to music, like I'll tell you something. So like, if you want to just feel bad about everything you do, like I can help with that. But otherwise, just like stream our music.
All right.
Well, thank you for silence, guys. Been Glass Beach, and we have been the Good Noise Podcast.